will prevent the loss of support offered by our many generous listeners.
And it is 10 p.m. You're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI in New York. Time now for In Other News.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we talk with Peter Ciampo about a type of geomancy sometimes known as field geometry. And this may connect to some points Dr. Ross Hamilton touched on from last week. But first, let's look at some of the stories in other news. Here's one by S.D. Wells from the Natural News website. Children's medicines coated with brain-damaging aluminum. Aluminum-like food coloring used to heavily coat liquid medicines for children contains dangerous amounts of aluminum and harmful synthetic petrochemicals. These, quote, petrochemicals are carcinogens containing petroleum, antifreeze, and ammonia, which cause a long list of adverse reactions. Aluminum poisoning can lead to short and long-term central nervous system damage, such as memory impairments, autism, epilepsy, mental retardation, and dementia. Research shows that just 4 parts per million of aluminum can cause the blood to coagulate. This is what causes Alzheimer's disease and has been documented to inhibit learning. Aluminum consumption can also be associated with the development of bone disorders, including stress fractures. Also known as tartrazine, yellow aluminum lake is a chemical concoction derived from coal tar. It's known to be a reproductive toxin. All artificial colors contain aluminum lake, so when your child gets to pick between red, blue, or green medicine, they're really choosing which poison they get to consume. Several chemically enhanced food colorings contain ammonia and therefore produce compounds proven to cause various cancers in animal studies, according to the Center for Science in the Public Interest. And the article continues. It enumerates the various colors and associated ailments. Blue, number one, research shows it causes kidney tumors in mice. Blue, number two, research shows even higher incidence of tumors, specifically in gliomas in male rates. I assume that's mice they're talking about. Red, number two, toxic to rodents, even at modest levels, and causes tumors of the bladder. Red number 3, FDA recognized it in 1990 as a cause of thyroid cancer in animals. It was banned in cosmetics, but still allowed in food and medicine. Red number 40, most popular dye of all, debilitates the immune system in mice. Allergic reactions are common. Green number 3 causes bladder and testes tumors. Yellow number 5 affects behavior and induces severe hypersensitivity reactions. Yellow number 6 causes adrenal tumors in animals. Some of the products and brand names: NyQuil, Tylenol, Robitussin, Jell-O, Gelatins, Cheetos, Skittles, Fruity Pebbles, Maraschino Cherries, Sausage, Mountain Dew, Doritos, Chewing Gum, and Powdered Drink Mixes. And one thing about chewing gum, I don't know if listeners noticed this, but back in 2004-2005, the transition occurred with chewing gum. The labels started to change. They updated the art, and nearly every brand has aspartame in it. If aspartame isn't written on it, it may be under a different name. Here's another story. Exactly what is a solar flare and how does it affect us? I'm sure many listeners know what a solar flare is, but how does solar activity influence human consciousness? Well, this article states that it affects the central nervous system, the stomach lining, all brain activity, including equilibrium, along with human behavior and all psychophysiological, the mental, emotional, physical response. Solar flares can cause us to be nervous, anxious, worrisome, jittery, dizzy, shaky, irritable, lethargic, exhausted. Solar flares and photon waves are changing the fabric of our physical reality as they have a powerful effect on our physical cellular level, causing our cellular memories to awaken and clear. Our lower emotions are low-frequency energy stored in our cells from past experiences and traumas that we have encountered and maybe not processed. They become stored as cellular memories. Photon energy is a much higher frequency energy that pulls up the lower emotional frequency so it can calibrate to the higher frequency. Then we find ourselves releasing these lower emotions of sadness and grief without knowing why. A couple of weeks ago, a friend of mine and I drove down to the Philadelphia Federal Reserve Bank to record an event sponsored by the Global Interdependence Center. The speaker was Paul Walsh, the Vice President of Weather Analytics and with the Weather Channel. He spoke to a room of investors about how new weather technology and sensing capability, high-speed computers, and enhanced forecasting capabilities are allowing businesses and analysts to leverage weather and environmental information to make profitable decisions. He was a meteorologist in the U.S. Air Force and provided weather-based intelligence support to warfighters and mission planners and served as the chief of weather operations for the Army's Elite 101st Airborne Division during Operation Desert Storm. Now he is speaking to investors and showing them how his information can help large corporations to use weather and climate intelligence to increase sales and maximize profits. His clients include Walmart, The Home Depot, Sears, Merrill Lynch, Citibank, and numerous hedge funds. We're going to play a short clip from the one-hour presentation that we filmed to give you an idea of what's going on here. This is Paul Walsh.
So what I'm going to do today is sort of give you an overview of the weather, the weather impacts on consumers in general, the current environment, in other words, what we're looking at and how the weather has been changing over the last few years, and then how the sort of convergence of technology and new and enhanced forecasting capabilities is coming together to provide what I believe will be a real revolution in terms of the use of environmental data in optimizing the way that, first, you know, we all live our lives, but also the way that businesses respond to and actually gain and profit from volatile weather. So when I sort of gave you that overview in terms of the way that the military uses weather information and environmental information has been used for hundreds and hundreds of years in terms of tactical planning and strategic planning. And of course, in the military, it's used in a very processed and programmatic way to optimize decisions and optimize the way that we go to war, literally. It's looked at in the military as a weather information, you know, applied correctly, is looked at as a force multiplier. If you know something that the other guy doesn't know, then you can adjust your tactics and prevail simply based on having better intelligence, better idea of what's going to happen in the future, and a better idea of how the historical weather has impacted military operations.
Paul Walsh, former meteorologist with the U.S. Air Force, talking to a room full of investors about how they can invest to increase sales and maximize profits off of weather and climate intelligence. Now, we've looked at some of the concepts of using the Earth's natural energies and spiritual forces with Dr. Ross Hamilton. He was the author of the book, A Tradition of Giants. Civilizations of the past have tuned into and used the Earth's natural energies, such as ley lines and energy grids. And today we see obelisks, Grecian arcs, and national monuments adorning particular geographical points in our landscape. Is it arbitrary decoration, or is there a profound body of knowledge that determines the location for these monuments, cathedrals, and other structures? Well, our guest this week says ley lines are the Earth's nervous system. They're waveforms that spiral and undulate, similar to our own DNA. If these lines are kinked or blocked, they can create a geopathic condition in affecting DNA, health, and social peace. Peter Champeau is the author of The Gaia Matrix, Arcom, and the Geometries of Destiny in the North American Landscape. His research naturally expands to the interconnected topics such as landscape geometry, biomes, trees of peace, and much more. He's a stonemason, an environmental artist, a farmer, an author, and geomancer. Peter, welcome to In Other News.
Opportunity to come on your show.
Well, it certainly is a delight to have you on. Now, you've mapped out ley lines of various cities, countries, and even the globe. What ley lines have you found in New York City?
Well, Jeff, there's with any place as creative as New York City, it needs a good number of feed lines to supply the creative energy that it's expressing. And New York City, I've to date found five major ley lines that feeds this creative power of New York City. To the uneducated on the topic of ley lines, it's a natural occurring sequence of geologic, geophysical, and cultural sites that are all aligned in a row. You might look at this also as a waveform, and where there are two lines, a plus and minus, that weave back and forth along these ley lines. And at the nodes, where we find these cultural events or a volcano or something like a bay, for instance, you know that's where these nodes cross. And at that intersecting point, there's an energy that coalesces form. And in the case of New York City, we have a ley line that stretches down the East Coast. If you could follow me, the cities of Boston, New Haven, New York City, Trenton, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., Atlanta, Georgia, and Mexico City are all in a dead straight line coming right up that coast there.
Now, Peter, if listeners want to see what this looks like, go to Peter's website. It's geometryofplace.com. That's the word geometryofplace, PLACE.com, all one word. And you could see what Peter is talking about on the maps on his website. So there's the Arcadia line.
Yes, the Arcadia line. I named it that because both New Orleans and Nova Scotia are on this line. The Acadians of Nova Scotia came south into New Orleans and developed the Cajun culture of Louisiana. So I named it that in that honor of those people who were, you know, my people, really, the French Canadians, you know, that were sent south by the English.
Gotcha. Okay. Let me ask you, Peter, can you explain in your research how these ley lines, if blocked, could affect an area and the life around it?
Well, one of the big events that happened on this particular ley line was the New Horizon Gulf oil spill we had last year, or was that 2 years ago? That's an energy block that was generated by an oil spill that then precipitated we know what it precipitated, just this tremendous environmental disaster. There's something of that nature occurs if a battlefield is on a ley line.
Right.
The ley line will stop before the battlefield, and then pick up after the battlefield. So there's a disruption of the flow of that current. These forces tend to shy away from such violence.
Okay, so that makes me think if it can be disrupted that way, then it could also be enhanced?
Yes. The English the ancient English, the megalithic cultures of English of England, developed this into a high science where they actually placed standing stones along these ley lines in order to enhance the flow of this ley. It seems to me that it was used as a agricultural fertility practice where, back then we didn't have modern fertilizers or the ability to spread cow manure over everything. So, how do you fertilize a field of wheat? I believe what was done was at that time there was a much more active atmosphere. You could actually draw those currents out of the atmosphere and direct it via this stone technology. The civilization that preceded us was a civilization of stone, where our civilization is that of steel.
You know, that's what Dr. Ross Hamilton was referencing last week, and when he spoke about how some of the indigenous tribes of North America could incorporate this knowledge of ley lines into their culture, but it goes way back also to the British.
It was a much different time back then. I'm quite certain that it was a totally different atmosphere that we were in, different electrical properties. What shifted all this was the Great Flood. That's identified in indigenous myth all over the world, that there was this huge catastrophe that happened approximately 10,000 years ago. It rained for 40 days and 40 nights. You know, where does that amount of water come from? The only place it could come from is from the atmosphere. So it suggested that there was a greater firmament than there is today, and the atmosphere was thicker, and it held more of a charge. There was more water present. You know, giants could probably live within that condition because there was far less radiation to deteriorate the body.
That's fascinating. I think that's also a missing piece there. Now, some of your research goes into something called biomes. And could you explain to listeners what that is and how you determine this?
Yes. In my book, Gaia Matrix, which is available on geometryofplace.com, the only place you can get it now, I identified a geometry that was centered over New England. I had this premise that if there is a geometry within flowers, within the human body, within really all the expression of life, then there must be also geometry in the planet itself. So I went about looking for these patterns, and indeed I started to find these circular expressions. One of the most obvious circular expressions is the Great Lakes here in North America, if centered on Sault Ste. Marie. Draw a radial line out to Chicago, and it goes around through Detroit and Niagara Falls and Duluth. That particular biome is water-based, so it's the Great Lakes biome. There's another biome that's up in the centered on Magdalen Island out in the Gulf of St. Lawrence, and that's the centric point of another ring that identifies the maritime biome. And that goes down into Augusta, Maine, and really identifies the very watery lake district of that area.
Mm-hmm.
Since the book, I've come to find that these ring forms are consistent in dimension, and I started looking for where else are these dimensions found? It got into a solar system conversation where I'm finding, in the book I identified Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts as the geologic center of the North American tectonic plate.
That connects with the Trees of Peace.
Yes, it does. Right, that's part of the Trees of Peace zone. And
before we get into the Earth rings, can you describe what that is and how that got there?
Well, yeah, that's a natural coalescence of nature and culture that has, evolved into a circular wheel, a medicine wheel, if you will. And good friend Sandra Dakani, Mohawk grandmother requested that I do a geographic study on this particular point and place called the Trees of Peace up on the Mohawk Trail in western Massachusetts. And the Trees of Peace were is an old growth forest whose trees were being named after or honoring peace chiefs of living Native American peoples, like Orville Looking Horse, who carries the pipe of peace for the Lakota people. Mm-hmm. He has a tree name there. So whenever I do these studies, well, all right, here's this trees of peace. What else has to do with peace in that area? So living here in this you know, quite nearby, there are these two peace pagodas that I'm aware of, one over in Grafton, New York, and one in Leverett, Massachusetts. So I place those two peace pagodas, Buddhist peace pagodas, on the map where they're located, and right between the two is where the Trees of Peace were. So whenever I see that on a map, it suggests that there is a chord of a geometry, a diameter in this case. So I use those three points as the starting points for a circle. And when I drew that circle, I found that there are all these New Age communities that have located themselves on there, like Kirpalo Yoga and the Abode of the Message, which is a Sufi community. And, there's just any number of these communities, and I think there was a good dozen of them around this wheel. And within this wheel, there's also every Buddhist sect that exists in the world has centers within this circle. And whenever I do these studies, I try to expand them as well to bring about a proofing of their nature. With this particular ring, it was 25 miles, I think, was it 50 miles in diameter. And by doubling that, I got another ring. And on this ring, this larger ring, were located all these Native American museums, places where they're like Cooperstown Museum of Native American History, the Pequot Museum down at Foxwood, the Narragansett Museum in Kingston, the Peabody Museum and the Yale Peabody Museum. This kind of like a conspiracy of time and space, where all these artifacts from all over the Americas coalesced into this ring around the Trees of Peace.
And that was my question: incidental or intentional?
It's a conspiracy of grace. I don't really think that. No, it's not intentional at all. These things are these biomes, these Trees of Peace geometries, these rings that I'm finding are just kind of like a phenomenon of nature, just like a hive coalesces and generates a certain shape. These nesting cultural forms that I'm discovering all over the planet cohere in a circular way, just like the Earth itself.
And the work that you recently discovered about the Earth rings, sort of an extension from just this research, can you describe a little bit of that?
So I'm finding these ring forms all over the planet. One of them was the North American tectonic plate, and that is referenced from the center of it, which is Shelburne Falls, and it's referenced by the arc of the West Coast, Mexico up through California. That ring is a 4,000-plus mile ring, and that ended up being the same size as Mars. Mars is the same size as the Earth's outer core. As well, there's the inner core of the Earth, which is 1,400 miles in diameter, and arcs like the coast of the east coast of China, you know, that curving arc, and the arc of Japan. Those two arcs are also resolved into a 1,400 mile circle. China's arc is centered on the Three Gorges Dam. And Japan's arc is centered on this border point between Russia, North Korea, and China.
So there's a broader correlation with the planets in the solar system.
Yes, yes. For instance, Venus, if we were to nest Venus within the Earth, that is the same size as the Earth's mantle. So we have this structure, this cross-section of the planet, if you will, right? And within that, we have this ring form or sphere forms with that are nested, one with the inner and outer core, and then the upper and lower mantle, and then the crust. If you take that proportionate ring form and expand it and superimpose it over the interior of the sun, it has that same ring pattern implicit to it. If you take that same ring form and put it over the pattern of the orbits of the planet, it has that same ring form. If you put it over the galaxy, it has the same a ring form in relationship to the density of stars as it goes out. We see that same ring form in the pattern of the human body, and we see that same ring form implicit in the geometry of water. So it's like this. I believe it's. I'm not quite certain what it is.
The patterns are very natural, and you pointed out micro to macro, relatively new information that you've unearthed. Have you documented this on your website yet?
Some of it I have. I've documented mostly on my YouTube channel, which is also geometryofplace.com. So there's a couple of videos I did there on the Earth rings that describes these discoveries. This is all totally original stuff. Visionary geographer here.
I bet it's kind of exciting to discover this kind of material.
It is, but you know, whenever you discover something new, it goes in the face of the accepted worldview. And so it's been quite a challenge to bring this to the world. So
we're about to take some calls here. Are you ready to take some calls?
Sure, yeah.
If you have a question or comment for our guest, Peter Champeau, you can call us at 212-209-2900, and we'll be right back after this break. And you're listening to In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Our guest is Peter Champeau, and he's the author of The Gaia Matrix, Arcom and the Geometries of Destiny in the North American Landscape. And if you have a question or comment for Peter, call us at 212-209-2900. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing, Jeff?
Is this Ed?
Yeah.
Ed, hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? Yourself?
Good.
Yeah, how you doing, Mr. Champeau?
Hi, Ed.
Yeah, how are you?
Good.
I had just a few questions for you. I mean, number one, what advantage would it be to the person as far as with these ley lines are concerned. Well, I'm more of a right brain person. I'm a technician by trade, and I work with electronics and heating and cooling systems. And I just wanted to know, how do you measure this energy? I mean, how did you come about finding these ley lines and these places of positive energy? Is there any type of way you can quantify them, or is it just an intuitive type of born ability you have, or some type of instrumentation?
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah.
This study comes out of the practice of feng shui. In this America, it's practiced as like a decorating tool, but feng shui, it translates to wind and water, and wind and water is only seen through its effect. So the wind blows, and we see that the tree, the leaves move. So similarly with these etheric energies, these ley lines, you can determine them by the effect of their passage. So if you see a series of volcanoes or mountains, and they're all in a line stretching for hundreds of miles or sometimes thousands of miles, that would be considered a ley line. And the qualities that ley line are, you know, the native qualities of place that are inherent to that ley line are the expressions of the nodes that you find upon them. So in the case of the Akkadian ley, that is a ley line with a number of cities along it. So if you were to, say, try to come in there and do something that wasn't of the city frequency, you would have a tough time, you know, getting that to take root along that lay.
You would only know by trial and error, basically. If you tried something that was against the nature of this energy that you're alleging is coming from this ley line, you would encounter interference or resistance or not success, and then you would have to try something else.
Well, you would only really be able to do that which was already being expressed along that ley line in a dynamic way.
Well, what I'm trying to, not to cut you off, I'm just trying to ascertain what value, and, you know, I'm not disputing your work, I'm a skeptic by nature,
yeah,
and I find some of this interesting, but I just like to ascertain what value it would be to knowing there's a ley line, and as far as what health-wise or would it be some benefit to a person to live on that ley line or to live within that ley line?
That's a good question, Ed. I was going to ask him the same thing.
Well, in old Ireland, they would not live on a ley line. If there was a ley coming through and you placed your house on that ley line, you would have to put a door on either end of your house so that, in this case, the fairies could go through without interference.
That was my question, Peter. I was going to ask you if, because I know someone who was told they live on a ley line and they have a lot of apparitions in their house.
Yeah. It carries consciousness. It's like a memory field, if you will. So it's an aggregate form.
Is it a vector for ghosts?
Well, it's a vector for memory.
Are the ghosts, are the impressions of life that has passed on the earth already, and it's like a recording almost.
That's right.
And that recording constantly replays and replays, and if you put yourself within that field of the recording, you'll be experiencing its effects.
Exactly.
And just one more question I had as far as the circles. I mean, how do you know they're just not happenstance, like the intricacies of a snowflake? I mean, is there any real reason you can ascertain for it, or is it just nature, just pure coincidence?
I don't know what the ring forms are at presently. I think that they might be some kind of gravity signature that coalesces matter in a consistent way.
Do you think there's some type of consciousness behind it? I'm familiar with the Gaia principle as far as the Earth and the universe being an actual living organism, and we're just reflections of that organism, and possibly sometimes when we pollute the organism or destroy the organism of Gaia, we get communications through different things which if you're of a mind, you can comprehend it to a certain extent. And I just wanted to know, do you believe this is a manifestation of that theory?
Yes, I believe that this is a manifestation of a living universe of which we are an integral part, something that we dance with. It's an energy form that to date we have not taken into consideration in our social patterning, in the way we interact, in the way we understand one another. By referencing the worldview in terms of these rings, we can better understand how we interrelate culturally, socially, and on a global level. We need to start expressing ourselves socially in an organic way that is in harmony, so that we can sustain, within the matrix of the living biology that the planet is.
Well, we're all connected to a certain extent, I believe that, and I believe if we can express that, we have to stop, basically. Like the opposite of that old Star Trek line, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. We all have to start thinking more communally. But I'm going to definitely get your book, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ed. Geometryofplace.com, you'll get it there.
Yeah, I wrote it down. I wrote down your website.
All right, great.
Thank you, Ed, for that call. Thank you very much. If you have a question or comment for Peter Champeau or his book, The Gaia Matrix, please call us at 212-209-2900. Can you tell us what the purpose is for placing monuments on ley line grids?
One of the real good examples of that is this monument series I found coming up from the Washington Monument through High Point, Jersey. There's a 150-foot tall obelisk there, and up to the Bennington Monument. The Bennington Monument is the site of the Bennington Battlefield, and it's considered that that battle was the battle that of independence by the revolutionaries winning that battle from England. It took the power from England and put it squarely into the hands of the colonials. To take this frequency of place that happened there in Bennington and bring it to Washington, D.C., it is my belief that the Masonic designers, who were acting altruistically to, improve our culture and create a civilization out of it, placed these monuments to carry this frequency from this place of origin, this prime origin of when we actually took possession, of this social contract, and transpose it down to Washington, D.C. Say that this is the case because the distances between these three spots are in the phi proportion, the 1 to 1.618. Mm-hmm. Which is the geometry of the body. It's kind of they call it the God number, and you find it in really all life forms. The difference between the height and width of an egg or a tree, it's in everything. And so and it's a frequency that was very heavily used by the Masons in their design parameters. The High Point, Jersey, is right on that phi point between Bennington and Washington.
I noticed that certain rock strata can influence the growth of certain plants and trees. I wonder if it does influence the ley lines, too.
Sure, yeah. Within rock, there is a thing called magnetite. The UN Chapel down there in New York City has one of the biggest pieces of magnetite ever quarried sitting there as the altar of that sacred site, sacred space. And magnetite has a heavier gravity signature. Whenever you go over any of these ancient sites, you always find a very high content of magnetite, in some cases you do, but in the U.S. I found that there's a lot of lays that are associated with these frequencies. Now, limestone is another thing altogether that we find underneath the The pyramids of Giza, we find it in Jerusalem, we find it in the Yucatan. It seems like there's a lot of these international heritage sites that are on limestone. Now limestone, of course, is the easiest rock to work. You can create mortar out of it, you can carve it easily. So, you know, chicken or egg, I don't know, but we're also limestone beings. Our bones are all made of calcium. Calcium perhaps is a memory holder, just like the cottage cheese of our brain, all lots of calcium in that. The glial cells of the body are all in a resonance with limestone. So sacred sites, cathedrals made out of limestone would attenuate frequencies that would directly impact human consciousness.
It makes me think of the Coral Castle. Our guest is Peter Champeau, and his name is spelled Champoux. The website is geometryofplace.com. That's spelled Geometry of Place, GeometryOfPlace.com. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, how you doing? My name is Charlie. I'm in Jersey City. It's a pleasure to speak to you, and your program is so very interesting tonight. And Mr. Champeau, I'm really interested in your information and everything. As a matter of fact, I'd like to play devil's advocate a little bit. Now, you have these sites that like Stonehenge or the site in America that corresponds to that. And it is true that when, in certain times of the year, they, when the sun comes up, it shines a certain way, and it measures out the seasons and everything. But then again, I mean, who's to say that maybe it wasn't just a bunch of, ancient people who decided just to put a lot of blocks up because they liked the way they look. And the fact that the Shriners are great, they're cool, but I don't, to me, they can be a secret society, or it could be just a bunch of fellows that get together, like to hang out, maybe go to Atlantic City once in a while and build children's hospitals. I guess I'll take my answer off the air, and God bless and have a good evening.
Very good. Was that a question? Or
I guess it was a vague criticism on, is it incidental?
Prior to your wristwatch, you had to be able to figure out time somehow. The big events in ancient times was knowing when the sunspot cycle was. The 11.5 or something year sunspot cycle that we're entering in right now in 2012. That was a time when there was this tremendous amount of radiation that was hitting the planet, and when that occurs, there's this big pulse of energy that enlivens the telluric body of the planet. And at that time, it's kind of like the the full moon, but the really, really full moon. really big energies to work with. So if you're a ceremonial culture and want to really amp up the juice, that's when you do your big ceremony, was on that time. Or if you're an agricultural society and dependent on these telluric energies to grow your crops, you would need to know when this was occurring so that you could plan for it and get the people out there to tend the ley lines. In England, ley lines are called ley lines because this guy Alfred Watkins was out walking. He was an insurance salesman in England and noticed that all these standing stones had family places with the suffix of lay in there, like Finlay, Conlay, this type of thing. So he called them ley lines. So these were lay keepers. They maintained the ley lines and were present. Or if there was some kind of thing that needed to be done to manage it, whatever that might be, they would be there to handle it.
I really think it's fascinating the way you mentioned how the atmosphere was very important to this energy, and we often talk about the geoengineering and the aerosol spraying of the atmosphere, and I wonder if that thwarts or suppresses that natural energy. We got another call here. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Jeff. Thank you very much for all your wonderful work and Jim Trails and the show is just very important. And Peter, just for if I can ask this question, January 22nd, I believe, was when most of us were watching football, or some of us, not me, but there was a solar flare that hit the Earth at or the atmosphere at 5 million miles per hour, I understand, and the fear being that the electric power grid may go down. And doing a little bit on 2012, that seems to be one of the concerns. Would you have a comment on that? That's a concern to me with grandchildren and such.
Hmm. Oh, sure, yeah. You know, it's something that happens every 11 years, so it's, you know, our bodies are used to it. And there's an evolutionary quotient in here. Radiation alters DNA, and DNA, as we know, is a source of life. It's a source of evolution. When solar flares or coronal mass ejections in the X-class in particular come out and hit the planet, we tend to get more tornadoes. So that 22nd, you might remember that when the 22nd hit was also when we had that spat of tornadoes down in Georgia that ripped up town. And all earthquakes are more prevalent, tornadoes and hurricanes, volcanoes, all those types of earth events are directly connected with the solar flare cycles, as well as wars. It tends to, this extra electric current that's coming through our body tends to inflame our emotions, give us aches and pains, things of that nature. There's considerable amount of research on the web on the actual effect of solar flares on our bodies, on our psyches.
Jesse Ventura did something on this. I just wanted to comment. He said that it is preventable with ground resistors to reinforce the transformers on the power grid across the nation. Does that make sense? That's important.
Yeah, well, certainly, yeah. You know, I'm not an electrician, but right. You know, certainly we have not prepared adequately for this type of thing. Back in the late 1800s, when an X-class flare hit this continent directly, it wiped out the entire telegraph system. You know, and that was hardwire stuff, and nothing as sensitive as the microcomputing we have going on right now. So it's we're very, very, very vulnerable in our electric grid system to this type of thing.
Caller, thank you so much for those good questions.
Thank you.
Okay, if you have a question for our guest, Peter Champeau. Okay, great. Just let me give out the number one more time. It's 212-209-2900. And go ahead, caller.
Yes. First off, I've been in and out of the room a great deal, and I missed the name of your show.
In Other News is the name of the show.
And your name is?
Jeff Brady.
Jeff Brady, thank you so much. I'm Gloria Victoria. To your guest, Mr. Champeau, first off, I attended college in Bennington, which is most amusing to hear you speak of it. Mm-hmm. I, too, am going to be a little bit of a, although I've spent my whole life following the same things that you're interested in, and I'm pretty qualified in some of these areas. I've studied astrophysics and botany, and I've been at the Ava, I haven't been to Stonehenge, but I did go in the mid-50s to Avebury Stone Circle, and Ayers Rock in Australia has always drawn me, and a lot of things like that. Have you ever heard of Ojai, California, O-J-A-I?
Yes, I have.
That's where my most formative years were spent there. Very early, we got way, way up into the mountains, and that's a place, I guess, like, I've never been to Sedona, Arizona, but it has that kind of a very strong magic, and all we children in the school felt it. So, on the devil's advocate side, one of you two mentioned something about the, all these lines of volcanoes. Well, or circles of them, that's simply, that follows the tectonic, fractures in the tectonic plates and cracks in the earth, and that's where lava would be sweeping up. And that's where you would naturally find it. There's nothing mystical about it. Also, the question of limestone. I believe that the host of the show mentioned something about trees growing better and so on and so on. Well, that's because
that was specifically about particular rock strata. I've noticed particular age of rock strata in certain areas, especially in upstate New York. There's a little sliver of a particular type, and I just noticed that the flora there was very unusual very unique.
Mm-hmm. I know. Well, it's an ecological niche. I also took botany in college in Bennington and rambled all around Mount Greylock and through the swamps and the bogs. And
Gloria, we have a limited amount of time, but I just want to say, can you just ask that question?
I would love to be convinced in it. I would see it in, as a factor of the earth, geomagnetic effects in the earth.
You have a very similar question to the last few callers. We really appreciate that call, and we're going to go to the other caller. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead, caller.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening.
Hey, what a fantastic show. Hey, Peter, I have a question for you. Traveling the Mohawk Trail, like all of our lives for like 50-some years, I love that road. That my dad always took that route too, crossing Massachusetts. And I'm very familiar with the Buddhist temple in Leverett, and there's a Buddhist community in Sherburn Falls where friends of mine are at. Well, what I'm interested in knowing is, being a tree guy, where are these trees of peace you're talking about? Because I thought I knew most of the forests all around Massachusetts, but I've never heard of that.
Yeah, the trees of peace are in the Mohawk Trail State Forest. You go into the, it's right off Route 2 in Savoy, Mass. Right at the border of Savoy.
I'm very familiar. I pleaded with those towns back about 20 years ago when they were cutting all the sugar maples down along those roads there.
Sure. Yeah.
Along 116, and up through Savoy, through Florida.
Yeah, that route you described, Route 2 is another ley line. Route 2 was an old Native American travel path from that comes down. If you look at the trajectory of the Mohawk River through New York State, it points right to Shelburne Falls and then also goes right to Boston. So that pathway, if you were to take that around the planet, hits a lot of Native American sacred sites like Hawaii and the Black Hills. So it's quite a line. I call that the First Nations leg. It goes over through Australia and up the west coast of Africa.
And Peter, is this book available? You can get it at a bookstore or something? I'd love to get it.
No, only on my website, geometryofplace.com.
Okay, well, I'm going to be looking it up.
Thank you.
And I'm going to tell my friends in Western Mass to check this show out so they can enjoy it too, all right?
Great.
And what a great, and you're up that way too, huh?
Yeah, I live in Greenfield.
Okay, well, my friends are right. There's a really good restaurant in Greenfield we go to once in a while. They have all kind of local brews and stuff up there. I'm sure you know where it's at.
Gave up drinking many years ago.
Oh, no, but the food there is fantastic.
All right.
It's an old brick building on the main drag in town. And
I'll
they have another
out.
One in another part of Massachusetts, too. But thanks a lot, righty?
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for that wonderful call. This is great. Peter, we've run out of time, and I just want to thank you for...
I could go for another couple hours.
I bet you could. So could I. I just want to give out that... website one more time, geometryofplace.com. Our guest, Peter Champeau, thank you very much for being on In Other News.
You're very welcome, Jeff. Thank you for having me.
And that will do it for us this evening. We're going into Fun Drive. See you in a few weeks.